All right, good afternoon. We're in session. This is the Wednesday afternoon, October 10th, 2018 afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Carla, please call the roll.
Udaly.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman. Wheeler.
Here.
Hi. Welcome to the Portland City Council. The City Council represents all Portlanders and meets to do the city's business. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during the City Council meetings so everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. To participate in Council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the Council Clerk's Office for communications to speak briefly about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or first readings of ordinances. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When you have 30 seconds left, a yellow light goes on. When your time is done, a red light goes on. If you are in the audience and would like to show your support for something that is said, please feel free to do a thumbs up. If you want to express that you do not support something, please feel free to do a thumbs down. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting or interrupting testimony or council deliberations, will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Thank you for helping your fellow Portlanders feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe.
Thank you, and I just want to remind people, if there's anybody waiting for item 1062, the Southwest Corridor Light Rail Project Preferred Alternative, that's been rescheduled to November 1st at 2 p.m. time certain. Carla, could you please read our one item for this afternoon, item number 1063.
Accept the 2018 Portland Historic Landmarks Commission State of the City Preservation Report.
And I would just like to remind people this is a report. There will be invited testimony, but there is not open public testimony given that it is a report. It's a pleasure to introduce the 2018 Portland Historic Landmark Commission State of the City Preservation Report. The first item of business today, of course, is to thank our dedicated volunteers who serve on the commission. This commission is a significant time commitment. It meets twice a month, and they review land use cases and provide design and policy advice. They're a dedicated, hard-working group of people that include Kirk Renzetta, Kristen Miner, Maya Fodi, Matthew Roman, Wendy Chung, Annie Mahoney, and Ernestina Fuenmeyer. I probably did not pronounce that right. Is that even close? It's close enough. All right, thank you. And so could you possibly just stand up so that we can recognize you? And I'd like to suspend the rules for just a moment. Thank you. Thank you all for your service. I also understand that former Commission Chair Renzetta, who will be presenting today, recently retired after 8 years of service on this commission, and I want to acknowledge his dedication to the city. This commission will be presenting their 7th report before the City Council, but they've been operating in the City of Portland since about 1969, providing leadership and expertise on maintaining and enhancing Portland's historic and architectural heritage. This report comes to the Council at a very important time when the city is under pressure for increasing building density and the desire to maintain Portland's unique character, and they're often seen as being in conflict with one another. These neighborhoods deserve the appropriate protection and predictability of quality infill that meets our density goals and inevitable growth while also meeting our goals for historic preservation. I look forward to hearing more today from the commission members and invited testifiers, and I'm committed to supporting the commission in all of its efforts. Former Commission Chair Kirk Renzetta and newly appointed Chair Kristen Miner, if you want to come forward, I believe you are going to kick off our presentation. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, commissioners, for the opportunity to present the 2018 State of the City report for the Portland Historic Landmarks Commission. I am the outgoing chair, and Kristen Miner, who I hope will be here in a few minutes, is going to be the presiding chair for hopefully the very long future of the commission. And oh, here she is right now. Just
perfect timing.
That's right.
Welcome.
Magnificent.
Just as we rehearsed.
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
So it was. It's as the State of the City is really meant to provide a summary of the previous year in terms of the accomplishments and some of the challenges that the Landmarks Commission has undertaken. And I'd like to also thank my fellow commissioners for the service that they've been providing and the support they provided the chair over the years. As they've really, it's been a team effort in terms of pulling the report together and to working on various issues that have faced the city's historic resources. But just to kind of back up for a second and explain a little bit of what we do, the Landmarks Commission reviews Type 3 alterations, demolitions, and new construction in historic districts. We make recommendations to City Council, particularly in the adoption of new guidelines and districts. Type 4 demolition reviews.
There we go.
We also provide advice on historic preservation matters, where we serve essentially as advocates for the city's historical resources. And we work very closely with the Design Commission, the Hearings Officer, Planning Sustainability Commission, the Portland Development Commission, Portland City Council, City Bureaus, and other committees. We also assist in establishing or removing or recommend local landmarks designations. We also review National Register nominations to forward on to the State Advisory Commission. We initiate and coordinate preservation and outreach programs within and outside the city, and we definitely could not do that without some very dedicated staff members. And I'd like to just also thank Hillary Adam Brandon Spencer Hartle. Sorry, I always want to say his last name first. For all their help over the past several years that they've been supporting the commission. In terms of what we're seeking from the commission, from the City Council for the upcoming year, is to really let the Landmarks Commission be a part of the solution to some of the city's most pressing problems. And we can affirmatively state that we're not an enemy of increased density or affordable housing. What we're really after, I think, is development that is sustainable, but also is compatible with the existing city fabric. We also really, when looking at the URM ordinance, we do think that the mandatory requirement is important, but we definitely are looking for the need for incentives in terms of helping property owners comply with this new regulation. We're also really, this will be, I think, the eighth year that I can remember anyway that we've asked City Council to fund the HRI. As you can see on the map on the right, it's I think the Lentz neighborhood. Lentz is one of the has had some of the highest level of demolitions that have occurred over the past 10 to 15 years, and it's one of the least represented communities in our HRI.
Could you just tell people at home what HRI stands for?
Sure, it's the Historic Resources Inventory. The inventory was first done in 1984 and hasn't been touched since then. So it's approaching over 30 years old that the city is essentially making planning decisions on data that is ancient in some ways. It's historical in and of itself. We're also asking to really have City Council's backing when we really tried to serve as advocates for Portland's unique places. We see that the residential infill project and what's BHBD?
Better Housing by Design.
Thank you. I forget all the acronyms. Can and should allow for new development to reflect, but it should reflect the existing character in which it's built. Our main priority is to encourage rehabilitation and adaptive reuse of the existing built fabric. We find that there's significant value and affordability in resources that we already have.
I'm going to just briefly talk a little bit about what we've accomplished in this past year as a commission and as staff. I'm including them as well. So advocacy recommendations, and those go to all sorts of legislative projects. We have held 21 public hearings, and that includes type 3s, some appeals, nominations, etc. And that and staff also performed 54 type 1s, 40 type 1Xs, and 93 type 3s. We all participate in various subcommittees, so those are doing sort of work to forward various legislative projects typically, or to serve on other bodies that might be making decisions for the city. We collaborate with the Design Commission in reviews, sometimes sitting together up at the dais, and sometimes just providing recommendations to each other in writing. We also provide advice and input on various bureau or agency projects, and that includes like the upcoming Southwest Corridor Transit project, which is going to be really exciting and we'll take some careful look from all sorts of bodies, including ours. And the Burnside Bridge project, which we actually saw just on a couple hearings ago. And then we also do work with various bodies outside of the city, such as collaborating with U of O to create a studio for graduate students in architecture, looking at work in a historic district. So there's a couple of projects I really wanted to highlight for you. One of those is the project at the top here by Allied Works. This is a replacement for a historic building on Northwest 23rd that you might recall was impacted severely by that gas explosion. And this building had a very easy path to approval, and the reason is that it fits into its context very well. And I'd like you to kind of note its relatively contemporary design. But the reason it fits into its context so well is that it has a very ordered expression on its facade. It uses extremely high-quality materials and detailing, and it celebrates the street level, much as the historic buildings in this district do. And then the project below it is a project not in our purview at all. And I'm highlighting this just because we also serve as advocates and try to connect people to make projects like this happen when we can. This is an internal conversion to a multi-unit project. I have to say not a lot of neighborhoods can scrape together the funding to save this from the wrecking ball, which is what happened in this case. But we would love to see more incentives overall to allow projects like this to happen. In the coming year, the commission has talked about having several overarching priorities and goals. These are listed as, you know, A, B, C, D, and just to go through them briefly, the first one is to ensure that historic preservation benefits all citizens. And we really need to recognize and protect important places for various communities that live in Portland. And by important places, that doesn't mean the most richly detailed or the most beautiful, even, of buildings. It means the places that are important to communities. So we need to look at what is most vulnerable because those are being lost.
And by citizens, you mean people who live in the city, right? Rather
than, I do. yes.
Those who are eligible to vote.
Exactly. Thank you. The second one is to really engage with our community, to reach out to listen, and also, conversely, to educate. There seem to be some myths about preservation, but conversely, we can always learn about what developers are up against. We'd like to be part of those conversations. Next is to advocate, again, for local and state incentives. We need to support rehabilitation and adaptive reuse in order to save buildings. And we keep saying preservation is important for sustainability, for quality of life, but sometimes buildings really have to adapt in order to be saved, and we are behind that 100%. And then finally, really supporting Portland's unique places. In many cases, developer-driven and development-driven solutions by themselves are not working. The photograph at the bottom here is a fairly typical scene of a new single-family residence, which replaced a much smaller one in its original location. And, you know, developers do want to maximize profits. One way they do that is by kind of maximizing efficiency. So they have a certain design that they know they can sell, and they will put it, you know, in various neighborhoods regardless of the original design context of that neighborhood. I also want to note that the average house size has increased by over 1,000 square feet since 1972, and probably more since before that, but that's when they first started keeping track of that number in the census. In our report, we looked at four facets of livability and affordability. So I'm just going to go through these four very quickly for you. The first one is by preserving historic multifamily housing, we support sustainability, we support affordability and economic diversity. And I just want to say on the affordability note that new construction almost always costs more than existing. And then also support character and livability. Second, looking at gentrification, those places that are more affordable are going to be more vulnerable. The photograph at the bottom of this slide is showing northeast Portland, the Albina area, and this is a photo taken in 1963. It was the clearing for I-5. And as you know, this neighborhood has been impacted not only by I-5, but by Legacy Emmanuel, by Memorial Coliseum, and a lot of projects that have already caused that community to lose not only a lot of housing, but a lot of cohesion and important places. So this is still happening. We do see a profound decrease in affordability, and the city's own study of displacement has illustrated that. And then third, we looked at equity and inclusion, and that kind of builds on gentrification, that the city needs to engage the most deeply affected populations. And those typically are communities of color. I illustrated this by a 1936 map, and this is by just one of a whole series of maps that were done in 1936 showing patterns of racial distribution across the city. And as kind of horrifying as that is to notice that, you know, the city spent time actually mapping where racial distributions occurred in the city, at the same time, we can go back and look at some of those maps and say, how were these populations affected, and how can we find those places that are still being lost that we don't know about and engage those communities to help us? Let's see. The photograph at the bottom is it's from the internal conversion study that the city did, I believe, just 2 years ago. So historic preservation can increase density. There are barriers to that, but there are ways that we can overcome that. And historically, many large houses across the city were rooming houses or boarding houses. It's been done before, and we can do it again.
Thank
So this is kind of the final pitch that we'd like to make for updating the historic resources inventory. I may have mentioned this story before, but when I served as an architectural historian in southern Maryland in a small rural county of under 100,000 people, over about a seven-year period, that community spent approximately $250,000 to do an update of their inventory back in the 1990s. And ever since then, I think that community has harnessed its history to the greatest extent as you possibly could. It was a community undergoing change. The population increased by almost 100%. They felt that the agricultural component of the community was being undermined by the tobacco buyout. And so it, too, was a community that was facing quite a significant amount of change in terms of character, in terms of the people who were there and everything. And they spent a fairly significant amount of money to update their inventory because they really cared about their history. And I think that as Portland moves into the end of the 20-teens, there's a real opportunity here for the city to take a more of a leadership role in its inventory. There have been, I think, some very positive movements in that direction. We've seen some funding over the years to develop plans to get the survey started, but we really need is a more substantial commitment from City Council because it's really difficult, I think, to plan for the city's historical resources without the most up-to-date information possible. And there are several cities across the West Coast that have jumped on the preservation bandwagon, including Los Angeles and Seattle, San Francisco, Denver. There's an endless number of cities just within the past 10 years that have spent a significant amount of money, even as they experience a significant amount of change as well. So I thought I would conclude our presentation on that note and open it up to questions for myself and Kristen on anything within our state of the city. Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you very much for all of your work. Thank you for this very clear presentation and the report. You caught my attention in many places. And particularly throughout the report, the emphasis on equity and who pays, who benefits, who's burdened, and who particularly needs attention at this time. I really applaud the way that you presented that as well as the thinking on that. The question I have, though, is on the Southwest Corridor, and I'm wondering how much assessment have you done? I know one property owner that wrote to me and said that they had a historic property that might be impacted by the Barber alignment. Did you look at what did you do on the Southwest Corridor?
We've had two briefings so far. It's such a large project that it needs to go. It needs to be seen by pretty much everyone in the city of Portland and further out than that even. So the process isn't quickly moving, but they have identified, and there's a sort of a table of properties that would be affected under various scenarios. And so they're still deciding on, which exact route they're going to be looking at. And part of that equation has to do with the number of affected historic properties, but there's also many other factors that come into play. So we have seen a preliminary list, but we don't yet know which properties for sure are going to be affected.
And you haven't given any advice on this route would be better than that route based on the identified historic properties, is that correct?
We have given advice based on, the least number of historic properties affected. But we also acknowledge that there are many other factors.
Plus the inventory is out of date, so we're not quite sure as yet. But if you could forward to me, if staff could forward to me the recommendation on the Southwest Corridor, we're going to be hearing that now on November 1st, and I do appreciate your advice. Thank you.
Great. Thanks.
Commissioner Fish.
First of all, thank you for an outstanding report and PowerPoint. And a couple questions. First, the historic resource inventory update ask. The $80,000 would go to whom to do what?
I might need to bring Brandon Spencer Hartle, if he's willing, to speak about that just a little bit. But the $80,000 ask was from the last fiscal cycle. So I'm not sure that even would be the ask for this coming year.
Are you contemplating it going to the Bureau of Development Services or to some third party or to your commission?
No, it definitely wouldn't be for our commission. It would be for the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability.
I see. So I'm sorry. Okay, that makes sense. And I think actually we owe it to you this year to take action on that request.
You're lucky.
I'll just speak for myself. I think you made a persuasive case. And what we'll be looking for when we get our first numbers from the budget office is how much of that one-time money do we have? Because this is a classic one-time ask. And so I appreciate you framing that. You know, I was looking at your report, and it has beautiful pictures in it, and you have the project of the year. And I'm constantly being accused by my children of being clueless and missing things and growing old without not gracefully. And I was looking at this picture, and I thought, I cannot believe this is my neighborhood, and I have not ever taken in this beautiful building. And then I was relieved to see that it hasn't actually been built. That it's there's actually, I think, a food cart of some kind or a chocolate stand, but it is to be built. And I agree with you. I think Allied Works does superb work. Can I go to page 25 and 26 of your written report for a second?
Sure.
So I'm very pleased that you highlighted Washington High School, which I guess got your highest award, the Art DeMuro Award. And it really is an extraordinary conversion. And who knows? Someday there may be affordable housing and a parks facility that's adjacent, so we'll see. But on page 26, you have a photograph of 734 East Burnside, which I take it is Le Pigeon Restaurant and their new annex. Is that right? But it's not identified in the text. And is the point that there's just been some historic that the storefronts have been brought back and they've expanded the restaurant space, but done so in a historically sensitive way?
Exactly. I think the point of this photograph was to make you think of a really iconic place in Portland. And certainly all of those insets along Burnside, where you have the arcaded facades, that is something that is unique in Portland. And so it's just an example of historic preservation and how we need to save those unique places.
And finally, I want to say that in your narrative on the URM, the unreinforced masonry ordinance, which will potentially come back to us in a year, and as you know, the council is very unsettled on this. I think I know where the trade winds are blowing, but I appreciate the analysis, and I appreciate this idea of admonishing us or challenging us to think about ways of incentivizing conversions, not demolitions. I am very concerned that our current thinking, which I think is a short-term play, is likely to result in a substantial number of demolitions. At the very least, I think our policies are going to make it extremely difficult for people to refinance their properties, to get the money out they need to make improvements. And I think over time, they could lead to demolitions. And I've been very clear on the record that I can't support that approach. So we'll be looking, you're the incoming chair. So we'll, in the next year, when this comes back to us following more staff work, I think it's very important that you're at the table helping us understand with people like Walt, who submitted testimony that is superb, very helpful. It's going right in my URM file. In terms of the necessity of having the right mix on incentives. If we don't get it right, we're going to lose a lot of buildings, and we're not going to get them back. And I don't support that approach, so I appreciate the thoughtful text. And anyway, it's as usual, a nice report. Thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Commissioner Daly.
Thank you for your work. Oh, sorry. I muted it. A sneezing. Oh, no, I'm doing it again. There we go. Sneezing fit. So I just want to thank you for the report, say that I share all of your priorities and goals. I'm especially heartened to see the focus on equity and inclusion, because I think there is a really kind of delicate balance to be struck between preserving historic structures and not preserving historic inequities in our neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. So I am really excited about the conversations about how we can achieve greater density but preserve all these beautiful buildings and neighborhoods, because I believe it can be done. And I'd love to help with engaging the community in this conversation however I can, because I think at this point Portlanders are so kind of shell-shocked by the rate of change that they're just really digging their feet in, not open to more change, even if it's going to be for the greater good. So I had one more thing to mention, but I think the sneezes wiped out my brain. So pass it off to you.
There you have it. Time for a reboot.
I support the historic inventory, the new historic resource inventory ask. I want to say that.
I'll add that to your list.
Yes.
Okay. You have other testimony. Is that correct?
Correct.
Very good.
Yes, we have invited several individuals to testify as well.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Who's next? We have a third chair if anybody else is intending to speak.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I think I'm sitting low. Oh, well. I'm Peggy Moretti. I am here representing Restore Oregon and was very honored to be invited to share some thoughts. On behalf of the members and volunteers and board of directors of Restore Oregon, I'm urging the City Council to thoroughly digest and act upon this incredibly thorough and spot-on State of the City report by the Landmarks Commission. This is really an extraordinarily in-depth effort by a group of volunteers who have very busy professional lives, and I think we're all in their debt. Restore Oregon agrees with everything that this report says, and we note that it's longer and more detailed than in past years, because to many of us it appears the city is backing away from its responsibility to steward the historic fabric that makes Portland, Portland. Recent evidence that has been concerning to us is found in the refusal to provide even the token funding for the historic resources inventory in the last budget, the contradiction of city policy and public process surrounding the last-minute spot zoning of incompatible heights in Japantown-Chinatown Historic District, and the outsized influence of developers in the Central City Plan. As Portland wrestles to grow without sprawling and to increase the amount of affordable housing, I just want to seize this opportunity to reiterate that preservation and density do indeed go hand in hand. I think you all know and have heard us say many, many times that historic neighborhoods are already dense and can be made even more so. The key is compatibility and incentives for retention of the existing buildings. We also believe that preservation is essential to the war on homelessness. Historic buildings are a major source of affordable housing. Just ask organizations like Innovative Housing, Inc. and the Central City Concern, among others, who have adapted historic buildings for that very purpose. And I would just say very succinctly, the most affordable home is the one already standing. What city has ever built their way to affordability while demolishing hundreds of modest-priced homes and replacing them with more expensive ones? If unfettered market rate building actually reduced prices, then the San Francisco Bay Area's average home price wouldn't be well north of $1 million. Portland's historic buildings are a multi-billion dollar asset, embodying our identity, culture, struggles, and aspirations, providing housing, incubating businesses, and attracting tourism. If only we knew where they all were. Like a shopkeeper who has only a vague idea of the inventory in his warehouse, Portland has only a vague idea of our historic assets. So how can we manage and make effective decisions about them? There's no excuse why a city of our stature should not make a modest annual investment of $80,000 to $100,000 to update our historic resources inventory. I want to acknowledge there's been a lot of pushback recently about neighborhoods that are seeking historic designation. This has little to do with exclusivity and everything to do with people grasping for the only tool at their disposal to thwart an ongoing demolition epidemic that is chewing up their neighborhood character and making it more expensive. There's also been an uproar over the loss of iconic buildings like the United Workmen Temple and Lotus Cafe with no public process or public voice in it. Both scenarios point out that Oregon's process for historic designation and protection is broken and completely out of sync with the rest of the United States. Restore Oregon is working with a coalition of organizations to bring forward legislation in the 2019 session that would change that. By instituting a more transparent, democratic, flexible, and locally driven process for historic designation and protection, and by passing a state tax credit for rehabilitation and seismic upgrades that would incentivize more preservation. We look forward to sharing our legislative concept in the very near future, and I hope that we will have the city's support. Restore Oregon appreciates the complex problems council is dealing with. We really do. And it may be tempting to brush aside preservation of our historic places as a lower priority. But these places matter a great deal to our cultural, economic, and environmental health. Once they're gone, they are gone forever. So I would just like to close by repeating again, the most affordable home is the one already standing. The most affordable home is the one already standing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioners. My name is Jessica Ingeman, and I'm a former Landmarks Commissioner, and I'm here to show my support for the wonderful report that was put out this year. Specifically, I wanted to talk to the point of incentives and the great need for incentives that we have. Several of you I know knew my longtime mentor, Art DeMuro. I've worked for Venerable Properties for 15 years. I live and breathe incentives. Most of my time is spent working with other developers and owners, helping them find ways to make historic preservation projects happen. And it is not easy. It's not easy to reuse old buildings. It's not easy to reuse old buildings in Portland. I know that there are other jurisdictions that are difficult, but it is difficult here in particular. I consult in Vancouver, I consult in Redmond, I consult in Salem, and my most challenging projects are here in Portland. There are also a lot of projects that come before me that don't actually ever happen. And I also know this firsthand, working for a developer, that there are projects that we just can't make happen because they don't pencil, because we don't have the tools that we need, because the land values are too high, because the tenants can't afford to pay the rent that would be required to justify the code-required upgrades to those buildings, the seismic upgrades, the other code life safety upgrades. And so I can say with a great amount of experience how much we need a better toolkit of incentives. And I think that that really starts with something that would be at the state level, whether that's a state-level historic tax credit, or whether that's a URM tax credit, whether it's tied to true designation or not. We need something that really helps in a meaningful way start to make the pro forma make more sense for these projects. There is, of course, a 20% historic tax credit at the federal level that was weakened with the last Tax Reform Act. It's still there. Projects are still using it. We, Oregon, we should be leveraging the value of that federal tax credit with a state tax credit. So that would be certainly the first priority. I think we also need better zoning incentives. We have some zoning incentives, and I believe there actually might be something in the works that makes this process a bit easier, but we need the flexibility to reuse historic buildings, and we need to be able to do so without an onerous multi-step land use process. I have several clients that are contemplating becoming a local landmark, then going through a second Type 3 review to use a preservation incentive, and then having to go through yet another land use review for their design alterations. Many months, many thousands of dollars. We need to make conversions easier. We should look for ways where do historic fourplexes really need to use the commercial building code that is so onerous. I have a client whose project was nearly stalled out because of the cost increases that came with having to comply with the commercial building code for a fourplex. We need a more predictable and streamlined FAR transfer process. And ideally, we would really like to have more building code flexibility. In other jurisdictions, the code official can make exceptions, reasonable exceptions to historic buildings to balance retention of fabric with making important code upgrades. And that process, in my perspective, is more onerous and less flexible in Portland. So I hope if there is anything that you can do to create a stronger toolkit and make it more feasible, it would certainly go a long way in keeping more of our wonderful buildings standing.
Thank you.
Just want you to let you know that I'm working on the floor area ratio piece of that. You had a long list, and I appreciate all the suggestions, and that's the piece that I'm trying to help with.
Thank you so much for that.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Dan Cook with Allied Works Architecture, and I'm here with my colleague Rebecca Wood, who's sitting in the back row there. We're the architects for the project at the corner of Northwest 23rd and Gleason, where the historic Burkhart building once stood and was unfortunately destroyed in the well-known 2016 gas explosion. And last week, we were delighted to hear from Hillary Adam with Design and Historic Resources that our building design was awarded Project of the Year by the Historic Landmark Commission. We're definitely honored to receive such recognition, and we'd like to speak briefly to how the historic design review process informed our design. This was our first project that we've presented to the commission, and we honestly didn't have a strong sense of what to expect. We'd heard that the process could be arduous, and so we focused a great deal of effort and time towards proposing thoughtful solutions through a clear and deliberate presentation. We took the Commission's design guidelines and goals seriously and studied the neighborhood's existing fabric to register important characteristics of building scale, materiality, and order. We were pleasantly surprised at our DAR presentation by the Commission's receptiveness to our ideas. They provided a great deal of positive feedback, along with thoughtful criticism or critical input that we heard and responded to with our subsequent design review presentation. The process did push us in directions we probably would otherwise not pursue, and the building and the building's design is definitely better for it. It's our intention that the building complement the neighborhood and that it feels like it belongs while being a product of today. And again, we're honored for the commission's accolades, and we take them as a testament to the power of thoughtful design. Upon its completion, we hope that this building proves out our deliberate choices and does all that it can to heal this prominent corner of our city and become a true asset to its Northwest neighbors. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And do we have one more person who's part of the panel? Is that correct? Very good. Thank you. And while that individual is coming up, just a couple of quick announcements. Item 1065, the Design Commission 2017 State of the City Design Report, which was scheduled for tomorrow afternoon, Thursday afternoon, has been rescheduled to October 17th at 2 p.m. time certain. Item 1066, the Latinx Heritage Month Proclamation, which was scheduled for tomorrow afternoon as well. That has also been scheduled, rescheduled to October 17th at 3 p.m. time certain. Thank you. Good afternoon, sir. Welcome.
Hi, Walt McMonies. I'm not sitting in that chair. Last week I ended up on the floor. I stupidly pulled the wrong lever. Anyway, hopefully I rise above my past problems. I was asked yesterday by Brian Emmerich, an architect I work with, to give his talk or give a talk for him today. So I scrambled, and there's a 27-page outline here for a three-minute talk with a couple of pictures at the back. If you've got those, the pictures are of the first one is of the Trinity Place Apartments, which we've done a full seismic upgrade on, pretty much close to life safety. And that's I'm very proud of that building, and we managed to do it for only $1,000,001. And behind that is a picture of my grandfather's store in what was called the Ladd Block in 1884. He moved in there and had a saddlery and business that then became a golf bag business, McClellan saddle business, fishing creole business. Anyway, this building unfortunately was demolished in 1948, so that's the reason I brought the picture, because we lost something in that period. In the late 40s, early 50s, we lost Ladd and Tilden Bank. We lost the Ledbetter House. We lost the Portland Hotel. Just any number of great buildings that would be wonderful to still have, but we weren't sensitive at the time, and they went down. I've done some renovation of historic properties. In my lengthy written testimony, I can recite them all. I've done four buildings. I have brought them to current earthquake code, and they were expensive to do, and we're lucky we were able to pull it off. I want to give kudos to the all-volunteer Landmarks Commission for the great work they do. I served on the Finance and Policy Committee, and I appreciate their strong support for the mandatory URM upgrade. I'm a proponent of the mandatory upgrade, even though I am an owner and find it to be extremely expensive to do, but if we have to do it, there's really going to be a huge earthquake, and we can't just put our heads in the sand and ignore it. Apartment buildings are kind of my thing, and they are important, and there are some beautiful apartment buildings in Portland. I don't know, the Oregonian ran an article recently on the 20 outstanding apartment buildings, and I had a couple of them on there. I was proud of that. But we really do have some beautiful buildings, and unfortunately, those all have to be seismically upgraded, or pretty much all of them are URMs. So that's going to be an enormous cost. And some of those buildings hopefully don't get demolished, but because they're so beautiful, I think that probably the chances are they will be preserved by someone, if not the current owner. In terms of financial assistance, and I balk at the word incentive. To me, incentive is giving a polar bear a sight of salmon and saying, why don't you go over to that side of your cage? These aren't incentives. These are essential financing assistance that's needed by these buildings. They aren't trivial. Again, some people don't take incentives to be a non-pejorative term, but to me, incentive is something that kind of, gee, these people ought to do this anyway, but we'll give them an incentive to do it. People don't have the ability to do it themselves. They need the financial assistance that only the city and the state can give. You did a great job in passing SB 311 in the last legislative session, and that's the dollar-for-dollar reduction of property taxes for seismic work, which hopefully will get implemented. And we definitely need the historic renovation or seismic renovation tax credit at the state level. It works wonderfully. The federal one works wonderfully. It has been gutted a little bit, but it's still there, and it's an enormous incentive to someone like me to do a renovation. Again, with the mandate has to come down, but it is going to threaten some of the more marginal properties with demolition. And so, again, we need those, quote, incentives, close quote. The inventory is essential as well. The mid-century modern houses that we're all now thinking are wonderful were not even mentioned in the original inventory, I don't think. There wasn't any furor about it. People didn't know they would even be valued. But they're completely absent, I think, from the inventory. things like that. And the inventory, there are many, many changes that have occurred to the buildings they did identify. They've either been renovated or they've been demolished or whatever. We need a current inventory. Well, that's pretty much my testimony, and thank you so much for putting up with me.
Walt, I have a question.
Sure.
And first of all, thank you for your written testimony. It's very, very thoughtful, as usual. I'm just curious, you know, you have some of the most storied historic properties in the city, and yes, a couple of them were featured in that Oregonian profile, yet you're able to keep your rents at some of them as low as $2 a square foot, $2 a foot, versus new construction at $450 a foot or more.
Correct.
And I'm just curious, what's your formula?
Well, my formula is buying that building for about $1 million and it's now worth about $13 million. So, you know, you're not getting a complete return on it's really a $13 million property, which is what the county assessor says it is. It's real market value. If we were going to have a proper return on that value, we'd be charging rents that were twice as big, as high as they are. But we need enough money to pay the bills and have a certain money come out every month for us. But we don't need we probably couldn't rent the apartments for $450 a square foot anyway. But it's really the low basis in the property and the fact that there have been these tax incentives. I have a tremendous management company that does a wonderful job at getting things done for half the money people say they're going to cost. And that's not by cutting corners. It's by just approaching things in a different way and realizing that you can accomplish the same result with spending less money. Like, for instance, hardening and strengthening the perimeter walls of the Trinity Place apartments, we did what you guys did with the city at the train station and what the McMinimans did at Crystal Ballroom. They got oil drilling rigs and drilled the top walls top to bottom and inserted rebar and concrete into those holes. So now you have a stiff load-bearing wall that's resistant to lateral force. But that's not this kind of standard, by-the-book engineering approach. It's to some extent cutting edge. But again, the city is the one who implemented it at Union Station, so it's to your credit that you did. It worked really well there.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming in.
Sure.
We appreciate it. As always, thank you. Very good. That completes our testimony. Any further discussion, or I'll entertain a motion.
Mayor, I move to accept the report.
Commissioner Fish moves the report. Yes?
And you have to open up to everyone.
No, I'm sorry we can't, but I will do this. Is it possible that you have your remarks written down? And if not, I would be happy to meet with you right after this meeting, and I'll hear what you have to say. Your handwriting couldn't be any worse than mine. But why don't we do that? I'll be happy to sit down with you, and if one other of my colleagues, we can't have more than... Perfect.
I'm not comfortable doing it.
Okay. I've made the offer, and
but
you can...
it's also a public forum, so we're taking more time to discuss it than we would be if I just...
I understand, but this is a report, so we have explicitly, through legislation, requested that this commission come back and present to us on a regular basis. It's not really a question that's open for public discussion. This is a mandate. Okay. And I'm the presiding officer, and I've told you what I've decided to do.
Okay.
We
so
have a motion
seconded?
And a second. Udaly seconded. Please call the roll.
Udaly.
Well, I have recovered my thought process, and I'm muted again. And I just wanted to say that I'm particularly excited about you highlighting the need to identify and advocate for historic resources in underrepresented communities, which are not necessarily big beautiful, architecturally significant buildings, but they're culturally significant. It's something near and dear to my heart. So again, if I can, my office or perhaps civic life can be of any assistance doing outreach to some of these communities, I just would love to participate in that. I think that's a just really exciting conversation. Aye.
Fritz.
We often do give superlatives when the reports come in, and this is always one of my favorite. I think this is a spectacular report. It's really outstanding in that it says not only the common sense things, but the unexpected things, and in particular calling out where the City Council, in your opinion, has made progress and where we have made maybe mistakes. And I appreciate that as a report from a community commission, that's exactly what I hope that you continue to do. So thank you. It's a brilliant report, and I'm very grateful for the emphasis on equity, as I mentioned earlier, for the specifics of what we need to be doing. And I do hope that we can get that historic resource inventory funded and started this year, because time is running out. Thank you to Hilary Adam and Kara Fayara-Venti and Brandon Spencer-Hartle. Your work is supporting the commission. Their support's yours, and you make a really good team. Thanks to Claire Adamsick on my site. I grew up in England. I got married in a church that was started in the 900s, and so I'm ever mindful that if we don't preserve old properties, we won't have any in the future, and there won't be these beautiful places like City Hall, where every day I come in, I feel blessed that I'm working in this amazing architectural and historic building. As Commissioner Udalie just said, there are other places that may not be as spectacular as City Hall, but are nevertheless significant and need to be saved. And as Peggy Moretti said several times, thank you, the most affordable building is the one that's already built. And we do need to be looking at reuse rather than zoning and other changes that are going to encourage even more demolitions. Aye.
Fish.
Well, I want to begin by thanking Kurt and Kristen for the presentation and the outstanding written report. And I think, if I'm counting correctly, I think we have the votes to cover the historic resource inventory, or at least we have two of the three we need. And the next thing is to keep a sharp eye out for the forecast that we get, just to see how much one-time and ongoing money. But I think you've made a compelling case that we should fund it this year, and I would prefer you don't have to come back next year and make the same case. So we'll see what we can do on that. And I appreciate just the quality of the report and the conversation. Peggy, I also think we got the final vote wrong on Old Town Chinatown, and it was I thought unfortunate, because it was the final action of a lot of really good work, and it sort of overshadowed. That's a bad pun. But it had the effect of displacing the moment where I thought a lot of good work had gone into the other things we took up. But I regretted that vote. I voted against it, and I thought we made a mistake. We do that from time to time. But we also, it's a democracy, and reasonable people can agree and disagree. I just think we got it wrong. I appreciate that. That both you and the Landmarks Commission will stay involved in the URM discussion. Walt, there's a line in your testimony that you submitted that I'm just going to read for the record. You say, quote, "I have been able to do voluntary seismic retrofits without enormous difficulty," and you've explained why, both in terms of your background, your experience, the financial strength of your buildings, and your cash flow. But you go on to say, "The same cannot be said of small mom-and-pop owners who often lack financial experience or access lenders. They need targeted assistance." And I completely concur in that. And unless we come up with the right package of targeted assistance, I don't think it's fair to put mom-and-pop owners in a situation where their only recourse is to sell. So we have a lot of work to do in the next year. Peggy, I also, you didn't mention it, but I want to just acknowledge that we have a historic carousel we're still trying to find a home for.
Waterfront.
And I hear some lobbying up on the dais, and maybe there's someone here who has an idea, but I will tell you the Parks Bureau stands ready to fully engage. And there's also a lot of interesting development, you know, that's in the works. There's an incredible vision for the new Albina district. There's a plan for the post office site. There's the Zidell site. There's the Innovation Quadrant. So the four kind of corners of that downtown corridor, plus other opportunities. So I have a hunch with your perseverance and the opportunities that are coming up, we'll find a home for that historic carousel. And thank you for taking on that fight. Like Commissioner Fritz, I really